one for all.
And one for all.
Welcome, one and all, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the show where we stand up for your rights and various other things. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Thank you very much, all of you who are tuning into the live streams worldwide. And, of course, those of you who are experiencing the delayed broadcast in Rush FM in Hamilton, I'm sure you'll catch up eventually. Now, climate cultists, and I'm sure, Will, you can resonate with this, they're just total scum, especially the educated ones. I had some climate cultist messaging me talking about Swedish. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Very, very difficult. You know, interestingly enough, her name's Emily, and she's a lecturer at a English university. When I asked her to look at both sides, like she sent me an article talking about, you know, it's a BBC hit piece basically that says meet the climate skeptics. And of course, anything that is tasked with a provocative title like that, you can be sure that the coverage is quite biased. So I sent her the counter article to that, which was written by The Telegraph, and asked her to look at both sides. And she goes, I always look at both sides. I'm a doctor of philosophy. It's not my job to do so. But you're confusing two very inequitable sides. It's just like, for goodness sake. You know? And then you know how, well, when you go to these people's Facebook page and you're never surprised by what they list as their beliefs and all that jazz? You know? Studying philosophy and feminism and all of this stuff. So basically, she's a Marxist cultist. And the reply that I got was just ridiculously long and drawn out. Blah 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 blah. You hate the environment. You want to destroy everything. Excuse me. I built my own hydrogen fuel cell in my car, and we have made a garden where none existed before, and we've quadrupled the size of it, plus made a whole bunch of other stuff available to grow on our decks. Thank you very much. And also, I stand up against the ridiculously disgusting corporations that are effing up the planet and environment every which way we look, particularly those like Monsanto, who are trying to do it on purpose. You know? And this is the thing that I really hate about climate cult, death cult, climate cultist, death cult scum, is that they make an assumption about who you are before they even ask a question about who you are. So I sent a reply. Four things, which I reckon everybody should know about me. Firstly, is the video that I made, Climate Change, What You Need to Know, Mr. News, where I have a look at both sides of the argument, where it's they're both pro-climate change, but they both have different opinions about it. For example, there's the grassroots movement who want sustainable communities, and then there's the banker movement who want carbon taxes. I also interviewed one of the world's top climatologists, Dr. Tim Ball, on the show, and the youngest MP in New Zealand's history, Gareth Hughes from the Green Party, who, when we asked him where was the emissions trading scheme money going to, he couldn't answer. And also, my personal favourite, the cherry on the top, a little video involving me and Will on Queen Street where we were assaulted by Greenpeace activists, so we named it aptly Climate Change Death Cult Morons. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Joining us for our Kiwi Collaborator section this time, where we try and give Kiwi activists the coverage that they frickin' deserve that mainstream media will not ever give them because it threatens the very establishment that they support. His name is Steve Green. Now, some of you may have remembered Maria Bradshaw coming on to talk about how her son committed suicide after a very short period of time after being on pharmaceutical drugs. And along those same lines, criticizing the psychiatric institutions for being one of the most tyrannical forces, covertly, of course, in this country. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Vinny. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you, mate. Now, I would love it if you would just give us a bit of a backgrounder on yourself, your qualifications, if any, and how you kind of got into activism.
Yeah, sure thing. So, well, I've been with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights for the last 20 years now. I didn't set out to get into it for that long, but just as time's gone by, you've learnt more about what's going on, and you really get the idea that, man, nobody's doing anything about this, and we need to do something about it. So I've stuck with it and met a lot of people. I've learnt a lot of information that probably is very not it's information that everyone should know. And it's just not – it's been blocked by the media. It's been blocked by the government. And, you know, we're – it's not me, by the way. And, people need to get that happening, need to get it out there. People need to stand up and actually, you know, say, take the control back. Take the control back of their families, of their schools, their you know, just all aspects of life. It seems to be eroded, and we can see a clear erosion, and the source of that erosion coming from people like psychiatrists and psychologists telling us what we should think, the thought police, and we want to turn that around, and that's why I'm doing it.
And what's the name of your organisation again?
Citizens Commission on Human Rights.
Oh, right.
Been going for 42 years internationally, and a little over 30 in New Zealand.
And how long have you personally been involved?
20 years. Quite a while.
Long, long pedigree.
Yeah.
Have you actually seen any? Well, in such a long span of experience. I'd wager you must have received at least some mainstream media coverage of the issue.
Oh, for sure. One of the first things that the group uncovered were the abuses of children at Lake Ellis Hospital, which is sort of partway down the North Island of New Zealand, probably near halfway, near Whanganui and Palmerston North, between the two, in a little place called Martin. And they were putting naughty kids in welfare and that sort of thing. They were throwing them in there under the care of this guy called Dr. Selwyn Leakes. That's his real name. And he was using the electric shock machine as a form of punishment. And they had painful drugs like paraldehyde. And they were shocking kids, you know, as young as six and as old as 16. And actually, we heard a report from Queen's Council, who did some investigation into this, that the youngest there was actually 4 years old, which is very appalling. And
whoa! They were electroshocking a four-year-old child.
Well, we don't know if they did it to the four-year-old child that was there, but we do know that they were using it pretty much indiscriminately to the majority of the boys that were at the child and adolescent unit.
Well, I don't understand electroshock therapy. I mean, it's like, I don't know, if somebody has a bad back or something, you put them on a torture rack. That's kind of like the sanity to me as it stands, you know. If somebody has a problem with their mind, shoot copious amounts of electricity through it. Doesn't that seem like slightly insane? And if so, why aren't the psychologists the ones getting the electroshock therapy for being so frickin' nuts?
Well, it's a very good question. And I think it's one you should put to them. Probably get someone on the show one day, and you know, it'll be quite a hoot. Their thinking is very, very crazy. I mean, it's, you can't sort of seem to use logic with the way they think. It just doesn't fit into their frame of reference.
Now, are we talking about? Just, I keep getting confused. Is it psychiatry or psychology that we're dealing with here? I thought it was psychiatry, right?
It is. It's a bit of both. They both come from similar roots.
Let's talk about the roots then. What's their roots?
Yep. Well, you're looking at originally you had these people who had these, you know, the bedlam days and that sort of thing, and you had people that looked after these sorts of institutions where they would throw people for pretty much, you know, who didn't have much control of their body or their minds or anything for whatever reason. And they were the caretakers. And, you know, they decided to, well, maybe we could do something. And of course, you know, from the Bedlam days, that was a time when some bright chap decided that he would charge admission to for the, you know, aristocracy and that sort of thing to come in and look at these crazy mad people.
Like and a freak show.
Yeah, exactly. And he made a lot of money over it. So it became a bit of an industry as such. And from there, they've gone into, you know, putting some sort of framework around that. And in 1879, somewhere around there, there was a experimental psychologist by the name of Wilhelm Wundt in Germany who decided to test to see if he could see if man had a soul. And his experiments were a complete failure on that front, and he decided that, no, man does not have a soul. They're just an animal. And, so therefore we must treat them as such. And pretty much that was a defining point in like a fork in the road, if you like, of where the treatments became very much of physical nature in their means.
If man was an animal, then why didn't they round up the aristocracy and put them through the meat grinders then and have some burgers?
Yes, well, one would say
that. You know how... That's how it works, isn't it, Stephen? I mean, the definitions that psychiatry and psychology are always put on other people, but they're never applied to the psychiatrist and the psychologist themselves. Like, a psychiatrist can't be insane because he's the one that diagnoses what insanity is. It's like the America's Cup, for example, you know? As soon as somebody beats the Americans, oh, the Americans just changed the rules, so the Americans are still the winner.
Yes. Yep. But they went into all sorts of things like, you know, extracting teeth and the different parts of your organs, you know, the bloodletting, the everything from that to the rotating chairs to, you know, putting in coffins and dunking them in water and ice baths. And, you know, there's just been quite a series of torture methods that have been actually, you know, inverted commas, psychiatric treatments. And this is their history. This is the profession's history. And
I would venture to guess that the industry hasn't changed much.
No. Well, it's made to look a bit nicer. For example, take electric shock, and in the early days, it was just pretty much hook them up to the mains and give them a good zap. And you'd imagine, you know, with your nerves and everything, that it would arch the back up pretty badly and in some cases break the spine and break other bones in the body and cause some pretty severe events, you know, crippling events that would happen to their patients. And so, you know, nowadays they use muscle relaxants and they use anesthetics. So they knock someone out and they make it so they can't move a muscle at all. And then they give them a good blast of electricity. And the reasoning behind this is that back in the day, they couldn't find any epileptics who had schizophrenia. That's bizarre, isn't it? An epileptic apparently didn't have schizophrenia. So what they did was they've tried to produce an epileptic fit on a normal person, so-called, you know, schizophrenic at that stage, in a means to way of curing them of this so-called disease that they saw the person had. And it's carried on right through today. That's been debunked.
Just like today,
donks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just like today, I mean, they talk about trying to cure, but they in fact, haven't they abandoned the whole rationale of curing things, and now they're just into treatment? Because they realize that they've never been able to cure anything. So if they kept claiming that they were trying to cure stuff and never did, people would think, oh, hey, something's up.
you're exactly right. They call it management now.
It's kind of like going from global warm. It's kind of like going from global cooling to global warming to climate change. You know, as soon as something discredits your argument, then you just change what your argument is and say that it's still valid.
Exactly. Yep. That's the way it works. Pretty brilliant on the public relations, though, to manage to get government funding for this length of time and you know, keep it going. For this long, because, you know, really, if you were to take a business look at what they're doing and what they're producing, it's pretty much, you know, death and mayhem. There's no real results, you know, of their treatments, of, you know, getting a productive member of society again. You know, that's pretty much why you go into the hospital system. You know, you break something or you get ill and you can't work or do anything, so they fix you up so you can get back and be a member of society again. Well, it's pretty much,
but you know, isn't that like kind of the direct opposite? Because in my experience, a lot of people that I know who have gone into psychiatric institutions have gone in for very little reason at all and come out much worse than before.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. It's like a complete flip side of what health should be. It's like how to create illness, how to create you know, deformities and death. I mean, it's got a The amount of death that's occurred of people in these institutions is incredible. Like more than the amount of people that have died in the wars around the world.
Yeah, well, yeah, wasn't it like the number one killer in the 20th century was the people's own governments, you know, general extermination campaigns like the Khmer Rouge and Chairman Mao and you know, the Russian exterminations and things of that nature was number one, and number two was psychiatry, you know, and it was a close second.
That's good. Yes, well, control of people has been, you know, getting into politics and has been quite a part of their legacy. You might not know, but there's a guy called a British psychiatrist by the name of John Rowling Rees, or J.R. Rees, and he was the co-founder of the World Federation of Mental Health. And this is in 1940. He told a meeting of the National Council of Mental Hygiene in the UK. He goes, "Public life, politics, and industry should all of them be within psychiatry's sphere of influence. We have made a useful attack upon a number of professions. The two easiest of them, naturally, are the teaching profession and the church. The two most difficult are law and medicine." And 5 years later, the co-founder of the World Federation of Mental Health, he's a Canadian psychiatrist called G. Brock Chisholm. He says, "To achieve world government, it is necessary to remove from the minds of men their individualism, loyalty to family traditions, national patriotism, and religious dogma." So that's almost the backdrop of you got of this, you know, social control of the populations, and you can see that pretty clearly now.
Well, yeah, it is kind of getting consistently worse, in my opinion. You know, it's almost like psychiatry still has legitimacy. It didn't have it in the first place, but conveniently it's really good at lying because it knows what people, how people think. So it's managed to convince everybody that it does have legitimacy, you know?
They say they've got that legitimacy, that's right. But when it comes down to it, do they actually? And we beg to differ. We say they haven't. They don't have, you know, right to control a person's mind. They just don't have it, and they shouldn't have it. No one should actually have it. No one should actually be above the law. But they effectively are. You know, you tell me, could you take someone against their will, lock them up for an indefinite period of time, you know, drug them, shock them, you know, do all sorts of various things, restrict their communication so they can't talk to people, like they can't talk to their family and that sort of thing. I mean, all these things are actual criminal
I was going to say, it sounds like the modus operandi of Charles Manson. You know? I mean, what are they going to do? What do they have to do before people wake up to the tyranny of psychiatry? I mean, do they have to start carving things into their foreheads with scalpels or something? I mean, come on!
You're putting swastikas in there or something like that. Getting back to their Nazi roots, you know?
Yeah. Well, in fact, that was a big part of Nazi campaigns and propaganda and all that was psychiatry. And indeed, many experiments were carried out on the victims who were kidnapped and taken to concentration camps so they could study their subjects and figure out a whole bunch of naughty little things about them. And of course, it's not entirely different today. I mean, you go down to the local psychiatrist's office and it's basically like a pseudo Auschwitz. I mean, everything but the ovens.
Pretty much. You know, just when Hitler was a boy, they were coming up with those racial hygiene plans. And, you know, people like Ernst Rudin and that. And you know, it's not as familiarly known, and it should be, that it was the Germans that were killed first in those concentration camps. They were the trial, and it was the mentally ill, around 30-odd thousand of them. Actually got put through as a test to that whole program before they got into the Jews. I mean, everyone knows that, you know, 6 million Jews went through and that sort of thing, but it was the mentally inferior or the and that sort of thing. And then, of course, the dissidents and the people that didn't agree with the government. And
yep, those people are very, very dangerous. You know, the very, very bad people who don't agree with genocide and murder and kidnapping and drugging people against their will. They're just nuts. and they should be locked up because they're dangerous. Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest live from New Zealand for our Kiwi Collaborator section is Steve Green, and we'll be right back after the break.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam. And admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone.
I'm sure Australia feels like that, drenched to the bone.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special Kiwi collaborator for today is Steve Green from the Human Rights Council of New Zealand, is it?
Citizens Commission on Human Rights, yeah.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Sorry.
No worries. Yeah.
My bad. Now, one thing I wanted to really get into here with psychiatry itself, I mean, what kind of resistance movements are there available to this? Because I've never seen a protest outside a psychiatric institution. I've never seen any psychiatrists be pulled out of their cars and tarred and feathered, you know, and all these things I'd really love to see. But in terms of actually going toe-to-toe with these scum, what kind of actions are being taken here?
Well, there's a variety of different things that we do. On a basic organisational level, what work we do is people come to us with complaints of what has occurred, whether it's from a psychiatrist or an actual treatment that they've received. It could be a child who's been labelled with some sort of thing like ADHD or conduct disorder or, you know, mathematics disorder or whatever they've decided to throw at the child. And we'd help the family or the individual to document what happened to them. If they want to file complaints, if they want to do some media, if they want to actually, you know, really get some change happening, we would go through channels to make that happen. Yeah, I mean, we've done protests and up and down the streets, and sometimes we do it in public venues and that sort of stuff. So a variety of things. Yeah, I mean, overseas it's a bit more. Maybe there's a lot more people, and say like Los Angeles or Washington, and they'd march on the street and do that sort of thing.
Well, they have all the psychiatric medications being advertised on television.
Mm. Actually,
we don't have that in that country, and that's what I think was the two differences. Well,
actually,
you know, they do.
Actually, we do. You know, there's only two countries in the world that has direct to consumer drug advertising, and that's America and New Zealand, the only two in the world. Now, in New Zealand, we have things like, you know, we don't have the psychiatric drugs yet, but we have the other drugs. Like they can do, you know, things like Panadol and how to get an erection and whatnot, various drugs like that, the Vioxx and things. But they haven't stooped to the other pharmaceutical, the psychotropics. In New Zealand, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I suppose they leave the psychotropics to the gang problem. You know.
Well, it's interesting because they have a very similar profile, these drugs, to street drugs, and most of them have actually started. Most of the street drugs have actually started out in psychiatry as a legitimized prescription drug. I mean, I don't know whether you know, but heroin, for example, used to be a prescription drug as late as the 1950s in New Zealand. It's unreal.
Whoa. Well, hey, well, they're now giving the kids cocaine for their attention deficit problem. So that, like,
exactly.
It's my favorite quote, and I told this to you yesterday, Steve. Always shocked, never surprised.
Yeah, yeah. The amount of stuff that's happening is just abysmal, and it's got to change. I mean, you know, putting kids on these powerful stimulants and drugs and even antidepressants, antipsychotics, you know, it was we're working with TV3 just in the last month, and they've just done a couple of good news items exposing the amount of antipsychotics and antidepressants being used in New Zealand. You know, over a million prescriptions for antidepressants, and antipsychotics has got the biggest pharmaceutical budget of all those drugs, and you know that's from ages of as young as 2 and as old as 100 are on those drugs, and for what reason? You know,
it's a one size fit all. In other words,
oh, pretty much. I mean. It's not like medical drugs. We say you've got a, you know, you can show an imbalance, or you can show like something wrong. Say with insulin in your body, you can actually have a look at that in a microscope, or you can see through an X-ray or a CAT scan or something that there's actually issues wrong, you know, a pathology to it. But and then you can see that, okay, with that pathology, you can. Have this drug or this drug to help with those sorts of pathological illnesses, you know, actual disease. But within psychiatry, you don't have any of that. All you have is someone subjectively looking at you and going, well, yes, I think this person's got this and that going on, or this kid's got this going on and that going on. There's no blood tests. There's, you know, sometimes they'll tell the parent, oh, he's got a chemical imbalance in his brain. He needs, you know, Ritalin to balance that. And that's actually a complete lie. It's a whole fabrication, and it actually just comes down to a marketing campaign.
Well, that's because it's not science, right. I'll add that's because it's actually not science at all. If you go to any major university around the world and you look at the demographics in engineering, in true science subjects, engineering or doing BSCs, apart from biology perhaps. And this isn't being sexist here. This is just a fact. You'll find that engineering is 80 to 90+% male. Mm-hmm. You'll find that physics and calculus are 80 to 90%+ male. You'll find that biology has maybe the highest female component, but it's still mainly male. Then you look into psychology and you'll find 70 to 80% female attendance and a bunch of feminized men. And
yeah, well, this is the difference, isn't it, Will? I mean, you're supposed to have some kind of scientific pathology, but instead you've got psychopathic pseudoscientists.
Well,
exactly.
Everyone knows at school, guys normally excel in math science subjects relative to females. You know, and so you know, when it's reversed, when we see 80% of psych grads are females, then we know that, okay, perhaps it's not leaning towards science. Perhaps it's leaning to more of an emotional analysis of people. And then, like you say, they call insane people sane all the time. Like, oh, I won't get into some social examples. It might be too controversial. But
yeah, we try and shy away from controversy on this show.
Occasionally.
Now and then, depending on who it is, of course. You're absolutely right, and you know the aspects of getting someone subjectively and shoving them in front of you and going, well, you know, they've got this and that wrong with them. You know, it's you would think that that's something that might have happened a very, very long time ago, and you know we've learnt from these things. And in today's day in society, you know, today's day with technological advances and the likes, you would change from that. But those of you who would remember the interview with Maria, that she talked about the before school checks. This is the mass screening of 4-year-olds in the country. Do you remember that? This is
I vaguely remember that.
Okay, well, the government's basically decided that through their advisors, and this is where you know, the bureaucrats come into it and the psychiatric advisors or the psychological advisors of the country make their mark. And they're advising, you know, the politicians and government that, you know, there needs to be changes made and to the behaviour of these kids. And they have the solutions and this is what they do. They've created this test. Actually, they haven't created it at all. What they've done is they've grabbed it from overseas. And it's called a strengths and difficulties questionnaire. And it's designed for a lot older kids, but they're using it on 4-year-olds in New Zealand. Now, I've got an official information aid request that came back and it said that there was around almost 60,000 kids that they've put through. And actually, I've seen a news item that says that it's actually 70,000 since 2008. That's from the health minister. That's an awful huge percentage of our 4-year-olds. And these are health checks, so they're looking at their eyes and their ears and, you know, normal sort of health-related things. And we've got no problems with those and actually think that those should be definitely done. But this is supposed to be like a pre-entrant to school test to make sure they're going to be doing well. And a huge component of this is the behavioural checks. And these are done by checklists. Very much the same way they check for ADHD or conduct disorder. That's actually what they're looking for. And they get the parents to fill out this checklist. You know, does the child fidget? Do they answer back to you? You know, how long do they, you know, take to look at a task? Those sorts of questions. And they get the parents to fill it out and they get the teachers to fill it out. And they come up with a score and whether the child's abnormal or on a borderline or normal. And these are absolutely psychiatric diagnostic tools to find out about a psychiatric so-called disease. And it's got no place in our educational system, no place whatsoever. It's actually got no place even in the health system. And, you know, we want to get the people up in arms over this. A screening, like a mass screening of our children. It's going to go on their file and they can't take it off their file. You know, they'll grow up and say, oh, you've got this, you know, mental disorder that's from you from a 4-year-old. It'll restrict them from different jobs, from obtaining different you know.
That's the reason why I walked away from a psychiatrist a while back. I was supposed to pay like $140, right, to get interviewed and do these tests and whatever, because my mum thought that I had ADHD because she got a brochure with all these symptoms that are, you know, typical of any kid, of course. So I went into the psychiatrist and, you know, did all these tests. And like one of them was like just sitting at a keyboard, you know, just testing your reaction times. And and the other stuff was like saying, oh, have you had your father missing for most or part of your life or whatever? And I say, well, yes, I have. And he goes, okay, well, it's usually one of the causes of ADHD. And I was like, hold on a second. This seems like a whole lot of BS to me. Would I really want to be labeled like this ever again? And I left his office that day. I think I was 14, went in there by myself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I left his office that day, never went back, never paid the bill, and I've never felt better.
A very good decision. Now, there are some timely and good decisions you can look back on your life and you can go, yeah, that was one of them. Well done.
Out of the mouths of babes, eh? Well, I think this is the interesting thing, you know. Even kids that have slight amounts of mistrust of authority figures can really figure these people out, because they're quite thinly veiled in their propaganda and their, well, basically, I they're kind of like social terrorists, in my opinion. They cause an inordinate amount of stress and, well, danger to the general public, who are totally unaware of them on a social level. And this is the reason why I think, you know, we shouldn't have a war on terrorism. We should have a war on psychiatry.
Well, I'll be in for that.
But, you know, the pretty difficulty is it'd be difficult to see a country that we can invade, you know. This is
Well, you don't have to invade a country to have a war on it, but maybe you just don't call it a war, you know. It's like, well, it's a war in our minds, isn't it? You know, it's a war on the families and the education system and, you know.
But
I think that's worth fighting for.
But it ties into so many other different things. I mean, you know, you and I are both aware of the New World Order, Steve, and how all these bankers and all these psychiatrists and basically the food industry, and it's a multifaceted agenda that's being put on us. So basically we're being attacked from all directions at all times. And that's the real difficulty here, is that when you're trying to correct either one of these particular phenomena that are causing damage to our society and to our people, it seems as though the other aspects that you're not focusing on at the time, so that you can effectively fight one particular enemy, basically they grow out of control in your absence of attention. So it is the entire system itself that needs to be reworked, not just psychiatry. Our very special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Steve Green, coming at us live from New Zealand. And we'll be right back after the break on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest joining us live from New Zealand as part of our Kiwi Collaborator section today is Steve Green. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And we're just discussing over the break, my consideration. I mean, I worked in the in the care industry for a short period of time, looking after autistic boys. And the one thing that I noticed was just how little oversight there was of my, of me, and more to the point, how little training I received in order to take care of somebody with serious conditions. Now, does that translate by chance to the psychiatric industry? Because my consideration was that there would be a heck of a lot of untrained, unmonitored people out there, and the potential for abuse would be enormous. Recently, an article here from gorillamedia.co.nz, Swiss therapist abused 114 patients. A social worker in Switzerland has confessed to sexually assaulting more than 100 mentally and physically disabled children and adults in care homes across Europe. The 54-year-old man, who has not been identified, committed the crimes in a 28-year span since 1982. And I would consider that the lack of oversight that happens in a lot of institutions would be very much responsible for allowing people like this to get away with abuse for significant periods of time.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And the nature of psychiatry and how it is set up, and we have all the control with the doctor, with the psychiatrist, and very little with anyone else, it really attracts the sort of person that may be quite, how should I put it? You know, I don't want to be sort of too. I mean, the amount of power and imbalance there is incredible. And if you're into that, if you actually want to be abusive or control another individual, well, you pretty much have that whole area of at your fingertips when you walk into the doors of psychiatry. I mean, as an individual, as a patient, if you happen to be in there, you pretty much lose all your rights as a citizen, and it's a pretty vulnerable place to be, and it should be actually a lot more restrictive on the workers in that sort of environment. But unfortunately, it is not. So these things do happen. Quite a lot.
Well, it's a hard one because, you know, there are, like everything the establishment does that's generally wrong, like the way they police society, or there are kernels of truth to why it's practiced at the same time, because, like, there are genuinely crazy people getting around, you know. I had to go to the court yesterday, court in downtown Auckland here, and I beat the police after 3 hours, so that was a good day.
Okay.
Judge ruled in my favour, but I noticed there were some nutcases there.
Yeah,
you know, not just on the police prosecution side, but just generally in the audience, and that there's some genuine nutcases out in society. And perhaps they do need to be put in a certain place so that the rest of us can enjoy our freedoms, but I just find it, and on the whole, I find psychiatry just totally ironic. These people who pretty much don't know anything about anything themselves are smart in a certain direction, then go out and want to judge people in the entire complexity of belief systems and approaches to life and perspectives on life. They want to go out and judge people according to their yardstick of normality, and it just comes across as really righteous, but righteous without them actually being in a position to be righteous. You know what I mean? I've met these psych students and psych graduates, and they're freaking idiots. And when it comes to knowing anything about history or tyranny or how populations are controlled, general mind control, I mean, they don't know basic Greek philosophy or anything. You know, they're kind of mindless themselves, and I would probably throw them in a bin myself, you know.
Right.
But I just find it kind of ironic. Don't you see
you're absolutely correct. Yeah, and you know, it was always the a real battle for psychiatry to be a part of medicine, and you know, this was something that is part of their history as well, and you know, it took them quite a bit of doing, and that they came out and tried to codify the, you know, various groups of people that they were so-called you know, should be in control of and treating, in inverted commas, is treating, you know. And this is where the where we now have this Bible of theirs, this faith book called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And, you know, it has everything in there that you could pretty much, you know, label a cat or a dog or anybody at all. You and I would probably have 50 or more of them in there ourselves. You know, there's no restrictions on who would be there, including themselves, of course. And this is the yardstick, which they go and they would you know, diagnose someone as having some sort of mental disease. And this is what lands people into these hospitals. And sure, we're not saying that, hey, there's nothing wrong with certain people. And that's another story, because and we might have to need to get onto that next time.
Indeed. Well, I'd love to have you back on again, Steve. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the first hour of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It is a very, very fabulous, nice, hot, sunny day here in Auckland. And we'll be back next hour, continuing on the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, mixing with the conspiracy and comedy of the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll be back, folks.
In the belly of the vulture, watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, front lines. Listen, consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Speaking of collaboration, we've got a second Kiwi collaborator for you today. It's a double whammy feature of sock puppetry. His name is Ray Foxley, and he comes to us live via Skype in the middle of the bush running off of solar panels. He is a outdoorsman who is, well, basically, he's been running into a lot of interesting facts about the use of 1080 in New Zealand. For those of you who are unaware what compound 1080 does, it's essentially one of the most virulent poisons in the world and is banned from being dropped everywhere in the world with the exception of one place, New Zealand. Ray, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good day. It's nice to be here. Carry on.
Well, I was just wondering if you could sort of introduce yourself and sort of how you got into this activism, because we had a good chat the other night about how you've basically only been researching this into this 1080 topic for the last 6 months. When I question you about it, you possess a ridiculously large amount of knowledge for such a short period of time. What piqued your interest?
Yeah, well, this is quite interesting. I've been in New Zealand for about 8 years now, and I told my family, my partner, New Zealand is the best country in the world to go to. It's the, you know, safest. There's no terrorism. You know, there's no poisonous animals. And, you know, for about, what, Joel, just till about last year, I was doing some adventure tourism at NMIT in Nelson. And one of my assignments was to give a talk about the benefits of 1080. So I really had to research into it. And living in the bush, I didn't really know too much, except for You know, sometimes I saw these signs everywhere, you know, with skull and crossbones saying, you know, poison, beware, and never really thought much in about it. But as I was researching into it a bit more, I started to find out, Doc was telling us, which is the Department of Conservation, that this poison, it kills 95% of the possums and rats, and apparently doesn't affect any other animals. And I thought, no, this seems really quite hard to believe. So I was looking into more and more information, and I was trying to find some records from the Department of Conservation for the amount of bykill, which is that's the birds that have killed by the use of this poison. And I've discovered that they've been using 1080 since 1954 here in New Zealand. And right up to 1994, there has been no records kept by the Department of Conservation or the Animal Health Board up until 1994. And that's absolutely shocking. Are you still with me? Hello?
Yeah, man, we're still here. Keep going.
Okay, oh. Yeah, no, it's just a... I just think I'm giving you speaking too fast or too slow. Just
you go for it, mate.
Oh well, in actual fact, we're coming up to break now. But you know, my personal thoughts on 1080 is that essentially it's a government agenda to reduce the food chain and to poison the environment, just along the kind of general eugenics line of the New World Order. Scumbag filth mongers are just lying to the public, spending the public's money with no thought about the people of tomorrow. Our very special guest coming to us live from New Zealand is Ray Foxley, ladies and gentlemen, a 1080 researcher, and we will be right back after the break on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah.
But I'm here now. So what you wanna do? How many dudes you really know can flow like this? Like this? Like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any. Not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
I don't know anybody. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. 5 days a week, ladies and gentlemen, so every single day you can get your daily dose of comedic conspiracy. Speaking of which, our very special guest, Ray Foxley, joins us from New Zealand. Ray, welcome back to the program.
Yes, thank you, Will. It's good to be here.
One thing that we were talking about over the break that we'd love for you to define for the audience is what 1080 actually is, its effects, compounds, you know, that kind of jazz, because to be honest, my understanding of it is rather rudimentary, and I'd love it if you could elaborate.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing. It's made up of fluoracetate, which is a fluoride, and this fluoride is a chemical that's found in a number of plants, and it's supposed to be the 13th most commonest element on Earth, but manufactured to high levels, it is considered to be one of the 10th most deadliest chemicals in the world, sodium fluoracetate. And it sounds very much like a toothpaste or something like that. And it is very effective killing mechanism for animals. And it has actually developed as a chemical for mass warfare. Originally started with the Germans during World War II. The Americas has developed it even further. And again, the threats in America was...
Sorry, the threat in America was... Oh, wow. We seem to have lost Ray there. We'll see if we can bring him back up. But the one interesting thing that I found about 1080 in our country is that if you are a advocate of 1080, working for DOC and on the payroll, that kind of thing, not only do you defend it till death do us part, more or less, but you also, even when you're unpaid, go looking for people who criticize 1080 and, you know, try and start arguments with them, try and disprove them with all these bogus graphs and whatnot. And of more recent times, there's been these two dudes called the Graph Boys in New Zealand who have made a couple of documentaries, one called A Shadow of Doubt and the other Poisoning Paradise, and these are well-made documentaries, in my opinion, about the effects of 1080. Things like, for example, when you drop it into an area, the stated intention is to only drop it in places that are inaccessible to regular trappings, because the idea is to get rid of possums and rats, you know, to protect native bird species. Now, what's happened in reality is that they are dropping it freaking everywhere, right? Like, there'll be a ridge right next to farmland, and the helicopters will be dropping on the other side of the ridge right into water catchment areas. And then they'll go up the ridge to just see the effects of the 1080 a day or two after the drops have been done via helicopter, so obviously it's very target specific. And they'll find all sorts of things. They'll find dead sheep, dead deer, dead endangered species of native New Zealand birds. Now, if I was to kill a native New Zealand bird, I would get a $50,000 New Zealand fine per bird.
If DOC, we have absolutely kills, protected species. Yep.
If DOC kills thousands and thousands of these birds of varying species and degrees and varying levels of proximity to extinction, guess how much fines they pay? Zippo! Because they're frickin' immune! Is,
once again, it's hypocrisy. 1080 is dropped out of aircraft, just willy-nilly. They did an island probably 10 k's away from me across a strip of water about a year ago. And during the drop, they covered the boundaries of the island so haphazardly that tons of it rained down into the oceans. Some fishermen out there had it landing on them in their boats. You know, lovely. Like this stuff's highly toxic to mammals and insects too.
And
the old dose
marine
required
life
to kill a human. Yeah, yeah. A lethal amount for a human is 2 to 10 milligrams per kg. So 2 to 10 parts per thousand, sort of thing. Parts per million. It's ridiculous. I mean, it kills insects too. In New Zealand, we have a very, because we don't have many native or any native mammals. We have some introduced rats, and possums and whatnot. But we don't have any native mammals as such. We mainly had insects and reptiles, and the reptiles would feed on these insects, and the birds feed on the reptiles, and so on. Now the whole forest ecosystem has been broken down due to the attack on the insects and the associated fauna who feed on them, and so it's a ecological problem, because then the whole forest structure as a whole breaks down and they have more excuse to clear the land, and then at the same time they're saying, oh, climate change and we need trees to absorb CO2, and so it's DOC, the Department of Conservation, Greenpeace, all these organizations are at complete odds with themselves. That's before we start getting into the government's policy. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely, and I know I have a friend who actually works for DOC. Good guy. I brought up the issue with him once, and he said, hey, it kills more bad things than it does good things, you know. That's a surface analysis, though, because there's also secondary deaths where our native owls will feed on a rat who's eaten it, and you know the rat's in its dying stages. They're foaming at the mouth, sort of limbering around, and then the native owl will die.
Well, and that's the interesting thing is because it's a food chain penetrator, that's what makes it so dangerous because of the fact that any animal could eat it and then any animal that eats that would die. For example, there was a 1080 drop in Tafra Nui and the dotterels, which are a protected species of bird, you know, small nesting birds and things like that, and we've all been told by dock rangers to stay away from the dotterel nesting grounds because they're protected and all that kind of jazz, but they drop all this frickin' poison all over the area, and the dotterels don't eat the poison, but the sandhoppers did, and the dotterels ate them and all died. Freaking ruthless, man. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
I got no concern for the environment. And this is the difficulty when people say, oh, well, you know, if you don't believe in climate change, you've got no care for the environment. I would say it's more the other way around. If you do believe in climate change, you don't care about the environment because you ignore every single environmental issue. All right. You know, we have Ray back on the line here. Ray, sorry to have you cut off there. Would you please continue on with explaining to us just the effects of 1080?
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. Yeah, we've discovered that America that supplied the 90% of sodium fluoracetate to New Zealand is actually banned from being stored in America itself. But apparently here in New Zealand, we've got stockpiled 10,000 kgs, which I don't know, that most probably could kill the population of New Zealand over, about 50 times over. But it's absolutely shocking to know that this product, fluoracetate, sodium fluoracetate, is marketed to us, the New Zealand people, as safe and biodegradable 1080. And this, currently, what happens is helicopters, they fly over large tracts of land, forest, bushland, farmland, and they drop pellets from these helicopter hoppers, and they space every 10 meters apart. Each one of these baits contains enough poison to kill over 100,000 ants, and scientists have monitored over 130 different invertebrates feed off of these baits, and they themselves become toxic to whatever animals or creatures eat them. And whatever animals die as a result of eating this sodium fluoracetate, it remains in their bodies unmetabolized, and they became baits in themselves for anything that eats them. So if a pig comes along and scavenges, if a bird, a moorpork, an owl, a weka, a kiwi picks at these dead possums, they in turn will die or receive sublethal amounts of poisoning, which is also on the safety data sheet classified as a male reproductive toxin. So this is actually quite scary. The baits that end up getting washed out from the steep hills down into the streams, into the rivers, into the sea, they now become nutrients for the algae and the plankton that uptake all these chemicals. They in turn feed the larvae and the fish. And I don't know if you get the reports from around the world about New Zealand, but we most probably have the most whale strandings in the whole world here along our coastal regions. The fish in the oceans are just dying off so quickly. And I believe the main concern is down to this poison, sodium fluoracetate. It has got such an effect because it's odorless and tasteless. Its effectiveness in water is incredible. Doc tell us that microorganisms break down this toxin into a harmless substance, but when one fluoracetate bait was put into a distilled water, it remained potent for 10 years afterwards, just in that water, being distilled in that water. It would be, if you wanted to mass kill off people, sodium fluoracetate would undoubtedly be the number one chemical to be used in the world. Which is scary, really, because we've come to New Zealand thinking it's a safe, green, it's marketed as 100% pure country.
Well, at least the 1080 pellets are coloured green. with green dye, and that's the interesting thing about sodium fluoroacetate as well. It's a fluoride compound, right? Just like they use as a binding agent in Prozac, you know, just to make people feel a lot more depressed and possibly have the side effect of committing suicide. And also on top of that, they fluoridate our water because it's good for our teeth. I was wondering at what point was rat poison and Prozac good for our teeth, you know?
That's the thing, mate. That's the thing. That's the funny thing about this, because I see it as the same argument as water fluoridation almost. It's just used in different application in a different form. Sodium fluoroacetate is a sodium fluoride salt. They make the salt using potassium fluoride, which is banned in most countries. But then sodium fluoride is added to British and American and Canadian and, you know, on and on in New Zealand water supplies. Approximately, you know, 40-50% of the occupants of the respective nations, I mean, are fluoridated. And so it's the same issue as I see it. If we're trying to curb one environmental problem by creating dozens of others, we're trying to say in New Zealand, oh, we need to get rid of rats and possums, and we're introducing this other factor. It's just like introducing cane toads into Australia, or introducing, just the number of species that have been introduced, mainly by the Brits over the years in their colonial expeditions, to cure a problem of a particular abundance of a certain species, always is going to result in further ecosystem problems.
Yeah, well, I think you're right there. Fluoracetate is a fluoride that works exactly the same way as fluoride in the water. And it's in small amounts, it could be considered safe. But don't forget, when you're using fluoride on your teeth topically in an area, that might be fine. But when you're digesting small amounts and they bioaccumulate, which they found with fluoride, they were monitoring crabs with fluoride over a 90-day period. And the flesh of the crab increased to 90 parts per million with fluoride that was found in the water. So just the same way as fluoracetate, which is a fluoride, exactly the same way, if we get exposed over a period of time, vast amounts of this fluoride, this is actually going to affect our system. It actually accumulates in our testes, of all things, believe it or not. And that's maybe why the USA, the EPA, have classified it as a male reproductive toxin.
Exactly. And then over the same period of time, here in New Zealand, we've seen a 50% reduction in sperm counts from the early 70s to present.
Yeah, well, you're right. There is a 50% reduction in sperm count. And there is a company, Menavit, they're advertising that on national TV here at the moment, you know, to take these tablets to improve your chances. And I know from research, 1 in 100 children are born in New Zealand with the result of fertility treatment. But tests in Japan now, what they're doing, the scientists are doing now, before they used to look at whale and meat as being very healthy for them, and Japanese people had the record for having the longest longevity of life through their consumption of fish. But there are actually warnings now in Japan for them not to eat the whale and dolphin meat because of higher levels of PCBs, which is the pesticides used, and they're actually tracing the chemicals through their hair samples. So if you can imagine that New Zealand uses twice as much pesticide than the whole of USA, that researchers say that one third of all the pesticide use ends up in our coastal waters into the sea. We are feeding our fish toxins, and don't forget, just not one type of toxin, several different toxins in combination make a toxic soup, which this plankton uptakes and then feeds up in the food chain. We are wiping out not only plankton, which are oxygen-producing organisms, they are responsible for creating 80% of the world's oxygen that we breathe. They take CO2 from the atmosphere and convert that by the use of photosynthesis to provide food. And, you know, again, scientists have been discovering and monitoring that we've had a decline of plankton, 40% decline throughout the whole world. And these harmful algae blooms, you've mostly heard them as red tides, have increased by 30% over the last 30 years or so. And these have been viewed from satellites. And these harmful algae blooms, which is the algae, the plankton, they normally occur after storms or where there's heavy rains, floods. All the nutrients, all the sediment, all the toxins, all get washed up, and these will provide these algae to just spread.
Mm-mm-mm. It's a dangerous, dangerous business when you're trying to help the environment based on lies. As Doc should know, but don't, because they refuse to acknowledge any facts on the issues. And, of course, they ignore all the activists who pull them up on it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest from New Zealand is Ray Foxley. We'll be right back on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Joke's rather sad. That's what it is. Genocide, ladies and gentlemen, is just a little bit of history repeating. And in fact, one of the first recorded instances of the use of 1080 was as a poison in the water supplies to Chinese communities that the Japanese troops were ordered to put into in Manchuria, where they invaded and exterminated entire communities in a brutal regime of dominance. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, broadcasting live from the future, and ironically enough, the future looks bright on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Our very special guest from New Zealand, Ray Foxley, continues to join us discussing this virulent poison and what it really is, because you won't get any facts out of the government. Ray, welcome back.
Yeah, good to be back. Yeah, well, carry on, yeah, what's your...
Well, Ray, we're all about accumulating facts against this government, and you've told us some great ones today, and so we need to further these and put them together in a concise way for people, because, you know, it's election here in New Zealand, and these trash who don't care about anything or anyone are just perpetuating their lies and still gathering votes somehow. It says a lot for the psychology of this country. But we're out to demonise them because they need to be demonised. Not because we just want to pick a fight, but this can't just. I'd like to think that if I go fishing down the road from me, I've got two beaches less than a kilometre in either direction from me, I'd like to think that I can eat something that's healthy, that's of substance, that's better than me going to the supermarket. And hey, it probably is, but you know, after hearing what you've got to say here, makes you second guess everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, this is what's happening, and I think here in New Zealand, people are starting to wake up from their slumber and realise that not everything we're told is actually as it seems. Like, I don't know if you know that even our muesli, you think it's healthy, a food product for us. There's been an alert out with New Zealand Food and Safety Authority. They found traces of pesticides even in our muesli, which is very, very worrying. With regards to our fish, I would hate to think what the residues of testing for the pesticides that we use are in the fish. and the seafood, and it actually scares me to actually have fish now, because I don't believe the government have actually released true figures and true statements about what's actually really causing the deaths of these fish, especially the dolphins and the whales. That they keep saying that starvation, bad weather, any excuses except for they could have been poisoned. And what I'm concerned of here in New Zealand, the only laboratories are actually government-owned labs where the testing gets sent. There's no independent testing in this country. So for us to get the general public to get a true results of testing for fish, we'd have to go overseas for that.
It's free market, isn't it? No independent testing. That's true, free market. I don't know why everyone's complaining about it. It's obviously a very capitalist system.
Well, that's the thing that really ticks me off, man, is like, there's just the lack of testing that gets done. For example, 1080 is not even tested for under New Zealand drinking water standards, when it's known to be a very virulent poison that makes its way into the water table and is dropped directly into waterways, which make them way into town reservoirs. And they still don't test it for it.
Yeah, well, I think there is testing there, Will. They say that there's been over 2,500 tests, but when they do this testing, they always seem to do it 24 to 36 hours after they've done the drop. So I don't know if you know that when you've got flowing water, if you drop something in there, it's not going to remain in that spot. It's going to flow downstream. So they're not really interested in detecting 1080 in the water. They just don't want to find traces of it high enough to their levels, their set levels. So that's why they wait to 24 to 36 hours. But if they've done their testing within the first 1 to 8 hours, where it's known that the most leaching's going to occur from these baits, they will get results on their from their test.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've also seen videos put on YouTube by Doc, also showing an area of pristine bush after they've dropped, after they've completed a 1080 drop, an aerial drop, and it shows, you know, native birds all singing and frolicking around in the trees as if nothing had happened. And, you know, that's another glimpse of their propaganda they use. See, it doesn't do anything, you know, but all the microbiological effects that you can't observe at the end of a camera lens just go unreported.
Yeah, well, I think this is what's happened. I think they know that to humans, we are microorganisms that can break this stuff down. So they will accept that we are getting small amounts of fluoracetate or the fluoride that's the result of the 1080 into our systems. Someone was just telling me yesterday that they went to a dock meeting and they had a green pellet that looked like a 1080 pellet and drank it with the pellet in there and said, look, these small amounts are safe to drink. They've actually convinced, when I'll just say, I think the general public on whole, they've convinced that a chemical of mass destruction is a safe, and they call it biodegradable 1080. And I believe they've got Saatchi & Saatchi to be the advertising people as well to help with their marketing campaigns to try and get 1080 to be acceptable to the general public. And one of the posters that they've recently used was a picture of a possum and a rat in a tree with a vine with a thrush nest, and the vine was nailed to the tree. And they were saying, look, this is what's happening in their forests each night. And it was just a scaremongering campaign to people for the need of 1080. And it's just almost like here in New Zealand, the public have just become so conditioned to accepting hundreds of tons of this toxic superclass 1A toxin classified by the World Health Organization into our forests, our playground areas, our back doors, close to our boundaries, in our drinking water. It's absolutely shocking. I'm disgusted that the government can get away with it. And talking about politicians, I've been trying to look at which politicians are actually doing something about this in this country. And, you know, it's even more shocking to see how much is shoved under the carpet by our politicians today. There is only one politician in the whole of New Zealand, which I know, which is Peter Dunn from the United Future Party, that is making a call for an outright ban for the use of 1080 and to provide
really?
Safe alternatives. That shows
this left-right dichotomy, doesn't it? Because Peter Dunn is on the so-called right, sort of Christian conservative. And, you know, so no one in the Green Party cares about this.
No, there's the Green Party and the National Party. They have developed some of these stoke traps that are resettable stoke traps that are fueled by a CO2 cartridge, a company called God Nature. They can kill possums up to 12 times without having to be reset, by sending someone out there to reset the traps. And also the New Zealand's top toxicologist, Charles Eason, has devised some traps with a company called Conovation Limited, which is a stoke trap, which the stokes can run through this tube type thing. It sprays a toxin on the belly and it just kills the stoke and it doesn't affect any birds or other bykill. And it's a much safer alternative to 1080. Another trust called PuketiTrust.org up in the Northland. This is a good example. They cover 5,500 hectares and they just solely have been using trapping and safer alternatives to poison. And they have got over 11,000 pests. And so far, they've only killed one bird, which was a kingfisher that got actually accidentally trapped in a cat trap. There are examples out there that alternatives do work. And actually, what's quite ironic is DOCA are actually bringing birds, endangered birds, to the Piketty Trust now to look after them because in their areas they can't control the pests by using these poisons. Doc gave letter of the week to one guy in Southland, Otago. Letter of the week, he claimed he's dropped over 400,000 tonnes of poison just on Southland, Otago. And I think that's believed mainly to kill the rabbits. But just in last week's Southland Times, it said rabbit numbers are higher than ever. it's funny. But you look at rats in Nelson alone. They've had a rat plague in Nelson, and the scientists have admitted that they believe it's linked to the 1080 drops. And even a researcher from Landcare Research said, we've been warning DOC for years and they haven't taken heed to what we're saying. The general public are told that 1080 is cost-effective and efficient for removing pests. But what I actually see is that 1080 is the most expensive toxin New Zealand has ever used for controlling pests. Not only has it not stemmed the tide of pests, it's actually increased a bigger flux of them coming back. I believe as well the bird bykill is far greater than DOC has admitted or even acknowledged, and it is increasingly speeding up the decline of our biodiversity. Already New Zealand has got the second worst rating in the whole world for biodiversity decline and wildlife decimation because...
And the environmental groups only care about climate change, don't they? It's a real problem, a real problem here and where I live with the environmentalists and I enjoy the bush as much as anyone else, but because I don't agree with them with their climate change theory, I'm kind of pushed out. But on the subject of controlling pests, I mean, people are just totally pragmatic to think, oh, it's the only thing we can do. We can't shoot them all. We can't trap them all. Well, sure we can. But the government doesn't want proliferation of guns, and the government doesn't want traps around. I'll tell you what, anything that comes in the bush around my place, blackbirds even humble blackbirds, I shoot them. Shoot them dead.
You can kill pests very, very easily via shooting. In fact, there was one person who's now an activist with the cannabis movement who was raided, and he was a pest shooter, professional pest shooter, and he was killing on average 1,000 pests a day. Their argument that, oh, there's no other way to do it, is just lies after lies after lies, and it's lies built on lies, and more lies built on those. So go ahead with what you're going to say, Ray.
Yeah,
sorry.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned a couple of points there about killing birds. So, you know, in New Zealand, we've got high fines for killing birds and native wildlife. There's like $100,000 fines and, you know, 12 months imprisonment for killing a wood pigeon. And, you know, you may have heard about the five Norwegians that were, Doc was chasing them down to prosecute them for loading on YouTube, killing these native birds. But when Doc do it, they can get away with it. You know, they've killed, what should I say, God knows how many birds. And the frightening thing is this, is if the general public are fined for killing these birds, like even weka, there's a $30,000 fine for killing a weka. Doc sometimes kill 95% of them on some of their island drops that I've read. If you totaled up all the amount of native birds that they've killed, like $100,000 there, $100,000 there, $100,000 there, it would be shocking. But, you know, well,
the government's above its own scrutiny, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, I think Clyde Graff from Poisoning Paradise...
We'll get into Clyde after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, a very special guest coming at us live is Ray Foxley. We're talking 1080 and government immunity from its own poisonous propaganda. And we'll be right back on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly supported by GorillaMedia.co.nz.
Do you know whose side are you?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our very special guest joining us live from New Zealand is Ray Foxley, and he is a 1080 researcher and activist. And one of the kind of things that I wanted to get into here was the opposition that Doc has actually put up to your arguments. Now, in my experience, basically, they just ignore or respond with lies to any particularly decent research or requests that have come up. Now, before the break came on, you were about to talk about Clyde Graff sending an Official Information Act request to the government. What was the question that he asked, and what was the reply?
Clyde was interesting to find out how many kiwi birds have died from the use of 1080 in New Zealand. Because to try and get an answer out of Doc is very, very hard. You know, they don't seem to have this information, or it's withheld from the general public. So the question was, how many kiwi birds were tested in the past 15 years for residues of the poisons 1080? And the answer came back as just 5 birds have been tested. Now, what that shows me is that out of all the birds that are handed in dead after a 1080 drop, how many of those are actually tested to see that it's been 1080 that's killed them and not by predation? And this is where I feel that the figures that have been given to the public, like very few birds are killed, is very misleading. And I would like this to be exposed a bit more, and for proper independent accounts of bird kill to be established after any drops whatsoever, rather than it just being all controlled internally by Doc, and whether or not an evaluation on a bird, how it died, it's all dependent upon Doc, whether it goes to testing or not. It's all very much in-house controlled, which I think it's allowing Doc to put 1080 into a very, what shall I say, one-sided story to the general public.
Like a circle of protection.
Yeah, it's basically to make 1080 look like it's in a good light. I mean, last year, TV One discovered that DOC, Department of Conservation, paid $1.28 million towards spin doctors. These are like public relations officers that speak for DOC on the benefits of 1080. Now, one particular guy has just admitted that one of the photographs that have been used to market the need for 1080 was a picture of a possum and a rat in on a tree with a nest, and the possum and the rat are feasting on this bird, and it was found out to be a shot was 40 different flashes, and the animals used were trained animals and conditioned for this photo shoot, and it was all a setup. And this to me shows just what a propaganda campaign there is out there to win the hearts and minds of the New Zealand people to accept Aerial 1080, this a chemical of mass destruction, as safe and a biodegradable product. It's just a joke.
Oh yeah, it's like the US getting Agent Orange, manufactured in New Zealand, of course, spraying it over Vietnamese villages and jungle, and then going in and giving them chocolate bars when they're all dying of poisoning. Win the hearts and minds, baby. Aren't we just a loving bunch of invaders, you know? Just total scum. I can't even believe it sometimes. But, you know, the difficulty that I have with government and with PR firms and all of these assorted scum trash is that they are getting paid to do this, right? And they ignore all the people that are opposing them for free. You know, and they never question, why would these people be devoting so much of their time to this? Because that would be the first question I would ask if somebody was really, really on to me about something and they weren't employed by anybody or anything like that. I'd wonder, hey, what the heck is their angle? I'm going to ask them a few questions about this and suss this person out. But not Doc. Oh, no. As soon as somebody comes in and criticizes you and says that, hey, you guys are a bunch of scum and you're poisoning our environment, you're not doing anything and you're lying to us all the time. The dock worker goes, oh, well, here's some propaganda, that'll shut you up.
Well, you mentioned the fines for killing birds here in New Zealand, and people might think this is a weird tangent to talk about, but in New Zealand has some of the most amazing species diversity on the planet and just really unique stuff, like live birth reptiles, not seen anywhere else in the world, for instance. But people are allowed to have cats that go and kill 20, 30 reptiles in a day, that just can kill birds left, right and centre. You know, millions of dollars worth of fines if you want to break it down. Government says that's fine. I mean, it's all second degree. As long as you can hide something behind from a first degree kill off of someone or something, if you can just hide it behind another layer, then people are stupid enough to accept it.
Yeah, well, I mean,
what's behind door number two?
Yeah, you hit there a little bit. I mean, The real possum as being the number one threat in New Zealand is just like a war on terror, basically, to try and convince the people, oh, we need to use 1080. But the real threats are most probably the stoats and the cats, like you say, the wild cats. They'd most probably do far more damage than a possum would. But this is all hype, just to hype up the need for 1080. And, yeah, when the truth really comes out, people will be shocked.
Yep. And heads, hopefully, will roll over. Thank you very much, Ray, for coming on the show with us today. And certainly love to have you on again sometime, mate.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. There's so much more I'd like to say, but, you'd have to challenge me a bit more. We only covered a small little area. There's so much more to talk about.
There's never enough time. And that's the interesting thing about this show, is that you always get a little less than you want, so you have to come back for more. Conveniently, we're on 5 days a week, and we'll see you again, ladies and gentlemen, next time.